Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The issue before the court this morning arises from a car ride taken by Samuel Madden, the driver, and Sandra Bach, the owner passenger. The trial court erred in allowing any fault of Sam and failure to keep a careful lookout to be imputed to Sandy as the owner of the vehicle as a matter of law. The facts clearly establish that Sandy relinquished any control over her car to Sam, who had agreed to handle all of the driving responsibilities for the ride to Sandy's widower's meeting. Any right of a passenger to exert any control over the vehicle is premised upon a legal fiction, and in Sandy's case, she certainly did not possess any ability to control the car, since she never learned how to drive a car, never had a driver's license, and under Missouri law, as a result, had no recognized right to control a motor vehicle.
Isn't this really an agency?
Your Honor, if you look at the true definition of agency, a principal does not maintain control over the physical details of the work performed. And if you look at that, as a result, a principal cannot be vicariously liable for the negligent acts of the agent. So even if we look at this as an agency situation, which I believe it's not even that, but even if we do, the principal still cannot be vicariously liable. So we still have the same result. The law in Missouri regarding a passenger owner's right to control a vehicle is currently in a state of contradiction. This court's decision in Stover made it clear that mere title to a vehicle does not establish control of the vehicle to the title holder when a passenger in a car. However, this court's decision in Manley highlighted the series of cases.
Let me stop. How is it that a principal is not liable for the negligent acts of its agent?
If you look at the restatement definition, Your Honor, if you look at the true definition, I mean, there's a difference between an agency and a master-servant relationship. In an agency, by definition, a principal does not maintain control over the physical details. A good example of that is the Reeling case.
Okay, let me give you the example that was in the briefs of a person who hired a chauffeur to drive around town.
Well, I would suggest, Your Honor.
Now, is the owner of the car and the person who's also the person who hired the chauffeur to drive, is that person not liable for the negligent acts?
In the case of a chauffeur, Your Honor, really what you have, if you really look at the true definition, you've got a bailment. Because the individual, the owner of the car, has relinquished control of the car and its operation to the chauffeur. And in the situation of a bailment, the bailor cannot be vicariously liable for the negligence of the bailee. It's relinquishment. And in this case...
But here you're saying whether or not an employer might be liable for the acts of an employee. Here there was not an employment, or at least you presented evidence there was no employment relationship. She simply didn't drive, and so she asked her grandson to drive her. Or nephew, or not.
Well, correct. There certainly is no employment relationship here.
I understood the brief, the way it was set out. You were drawing distinctions between general agency in that sense versus...
Correct. Well, in the true definition of a master-servant relationship, the master does maintain control over the physical details of whatever action is undertaken. In an agency relationship, by definition, that is not the case. So,
well, this is alleged as a joint venture, perhaps.
And a joint venture is a species of agency.
Was joint venture submitted, or how exactly was this something the trial court decided? How exactly?
Well, the trial court basically decided this issue as a matter of law, the fact that Sandy owned the car and was a passenger, that as a matter of law, that established her right to control the car.
So this instruction, this is the instruction that was given. It says if you find that he was liable, he was at fault, you have to attribute that to her.
Correct.
That's what you're saying was error, that issue of law.
Any comparative fault being imputed to Sandy.
And is it your argument that we should have submitted as a question of fact whether or not he exercised control right to control?
Correct, Your Honor. I think all of these cases, we need to not put the cart before the horse, because there's a tendency right now, as the Eastern District did in the lower decision, to stamp these agency, to stamp it master-servant, and then look at the case on that. What we need to do is start by looking at the
underlying
facts.
That's what every plaintiff's lawyer wants. And here's a case where in 999 cases out of 1,000, the plaintiff's lawyers want this agency relationship so that the principal can be liable.
Well, Your Honor, if you look at the history of this doctrine, what essentially happened here is we're looking for an owner of a car who's got more financial resources as an owner of a car.
Right.
But what happened is the ugly stepchild of that doctrine that if the passenger owner sues a third party, the negligence of the driver is then imputed to her. Well, that wasn't the purpose of the doctrine.
In the real key issue here, control, would you agree that the key issue in vicarious liability is control?
Absolutely. Yes.
And that in this situation, why we've drawn a distinction in the past between a passenger who doesn't own the car and a driver is that passenger has no control. Here, this passenger, the court below said, has control as a matter of law because she owns the car. At any time, she can tell the driver, pull over, stop, I'm out of here, or you're out of here, no more. So doesn't she, by owning it, having the ability to tell the passenger or the driver to pull over, to stop, to whatever, isn't that what they're focusing on as control by matter of law?
Well, first of all, any right to control a car by a passenger is a legal fiction. I mean, if we're driving down the street and I'm driving a car and the passenger rests the wheel for me, that's going to be negligence in itself. So
no, it's not that. Just saying I have, you know, I chose to let you drive this car. I'm riding in it. I buy what I get. If you don't pull over, that's a whole different deal. But I can tell you to pull over and stop. Let me ask this. What's the specific nature of this accident? What's the negligence of the driver?
The negligence of the driver, as alleged, was failure to keep a careful lookout.
Okay. He put on the brakes and the brakes locked up, I thought.
Correct.
Okay. Is there any evidence that prior to this time he had been driving in anything but a normal manner?
No. Well, and to answer your question more specifically, Your Honor, in this case, I mean, Sandy didn't even know how to drive an automobile. And if we start from the premise that the owner of a car, even if she knows how to drive a car, has any ability to control that car, when you think of the fact that the brakes, the steering mechanism, the accelerator are all by definition on the driver's side of the car. I mean, what in effect can a passenger do? Certainly a passenger can perhaps tell direction, you know, turn here, go here. And that, in this case, that was not the situation, however. But when we talk about a right to control, if we recognize a right to control an automobile
We have to recognize the right to control in general. That is, that she has the ability to tell him to stop. She has the ability to let him drive the car and not to drive the car.
Right.
I mean, you can't ignore that.
Is
that this was a one-time, specific, instantaneous action over which she had no participation as an owner. Her right to control was irrelevant here because there was no forewarning of him driving in a manner that would cause her danger.
And you're correct. So we really do need to look at the facts of this particular case, because in this particular case, both parties agreed she had relinquished her ability to control that car. He's driving down Route Y near Troy, and she's really not even paying attention because her understanding.
I don't see where we would ever get vicarious liability theory.
Well, if we look at a case based upon the facts.
Well, let's go back to my example of a chauffeur driving someone else's car. I don't understand the difference between that example and what we have here.
Well, I think in that situation, it's a bailment.
Well, let's say that the chauffeur's doing it gratis.
Would a distinction in Judge Limbaugh's example be made whether the chauffeur is an independent contractor or an employee?
That's correct. That's another way to look at it. You can look at it as a bailment. You can look at it as an independent contractor. When you analyze the facts of the case, you can then put the category of whatever.
Yeah,
it is.
But the driver here was not an independent contractor. So.
No, that's
but
correct.
Didn't we? I mean, we already addressed this issue in Stover in 1970 and said mere ownership is in and of itself insufficient. basis to hold the passenger liable, you have to show something more, some greater kind of control. So we address that policy issue. What else do you have to show?
But in that was, you're correct, Your Honor, because mere ownership is not enough. And what the trial court did in this case, he said the fact that she owned the car, as a matter of law, she's got the ability to control that car.
So what would defendant have to show, or what more does there need to be in order to hold her responsible?
Well, in this case, there's an agreement between Sam and Sandy that she had relinquished any driving responsibilities that day. I mean, that is not in dispute.
So you would look at the specific facts of the case to see if, and then it would be a jury question as to whether
correct.
Or not there was...
Correct.
So the fact that she didn't have a driver's license and didn't know how to drive, is that a major factor? Does that make any difference to your case?
It's certainly a major factor. And I think when you look at the statutes in Missouri, a passenger has the standard for the passenger is ordinary care. The standard for the driver is the highest degree of care.
But you are omitting a critical fact, it seems to me, and that is that this lady engaged her relative to drive her around.
She engaged him to drive around, but that didn't mean she had a right to control the vehicle. I mean, they were traveling to a widower's meeting. As far as getting to the destination,
it just can't mean that control means that you're the backseat driver and you're dictating every little movement of the driver of the car. It just can't mean that.
Well,
or we never have vicarious liability.
She was. That's not the situation here. I mean, if you look at the facts, she had relinquished any control in that car.
Is the issue whether she had a right to control or whether she actually controlled?
The issue should be whether she actually could control. I mean, if you look at the other states, there's heavy criticism of any right or recognition of a right of a passenger to control an automobile. And I think this state ought to look at those cases and realize that it is indeed a legal fiction. And if we recognize any right to control a car by an owner passenger, we're heading down a slippery slope. See that my time has passed on.
Thank you, counsel.
Mr. Cox, judges of the Supreme Court, may it please the court. Good morning. I would like to start, if I may, with the issues on the cross appeal. And if there are questions, I would ask you to throw them at me because I want to get through this very, very quickly.
I think the court's interested in this other issue, so you might respond on on the right to control issue first.
I might say I first of all will disagree that either the parties agreed or there was any evidence in the trial court that Ms. Bach relinquished control of the automobile. And to respond to another point that was made, this was not...
She didn't know how to drive and she never claimed that she knew how to drive. She couldn't tell him how to drive. You don't contest, so it's a hypothetical right to control. I mean, if she told him how to drive, they would be sure to have an accident.
Well, no, Judge. I mean, you don't have to be able to drive an automobile in order to tell someone who's your agent,
right,
when to stop driving the way they are or where to go.
But it's not your argument here, if I understand, that she saw him driving negligently and continued to let him drive.
Your Honor, it's all about presumptions, and I'm going to get to that in a minute, but I would disagree that this is a case where this appeared instantaneously. There was evidence before the court below that the young man could see the intersection a third of a mile away. He said he saw from a third of a mile an emergency vehicle, and he could see there was no light on it. Now, at the same time, there is a fire truck with four lights on it right beyond the white vehicle he saw with no light on it. I think the issue here is, Your Honor and Your Honors, it is presumption. If we are going to accept Mr. Madden's story and Ms. Bach's story, they are, after all, relative, then how can I ever prove?
Well, but are you, by your facts, and maybe I'm misunderstanding, saying that really you wanted to submit that she was negligent in letting him continue to drive as opposed to, I thought the issue was decided below on this automatic legal presumption, as opposed to maybe an issue of fact as to whether or not she, in fact, negligently entrusted the automobile to him or something.
You might say it's not an automatic. No law says it's automatic. It's a presumption. That presumption played no part in this case because Ms. Bach testified that she asked her nephew to take her to Troy for her business.
Okay. Okay.
And the whole issue here is going to be on whose business was this trip arranged.
Well, let me ask you this. Yes for questions. I know a number of blind people who are employed, and so they buy a car, and their teenage children, they're not paid, and teenage children will drive them, because they can drive, to different places they need to go. The blind person cannot see, cannot deal with, cannot control, has no, so a presumption against the blind person because they own the car is ridiculous when you come to the point of saying, do they have any control? No, they can't see anything that's there.
Look, may I talk about
a presumption, maybe a factual thing of who has control is just basically.
May I talk about what kind of presumption this is? Because there are two ways to look at a presumption in this particular instance. One is a presumption that makes a difference in the, at the end. The other is a presumption that would be called a bursting bubble. And in fact, the federal rules of evidence and the uniform rules of evidence take a different view of that. Missouri subscribes to the bursting bubble theory, which means, Your Honor, as soon as a defendant or a plaintiff seeking recovery offered evidence of visual impairment, that presumption would disappear.
But that means it's not based just on ownership. It's based on something else, you're saying.
Yes.
And what is it? What is the test?
Your Honor, as in any case of agency, the test is what is the predominant purpose of the trip?
But if you're blind, you'd still have the predominant purpose of the trip to bring them someplace. I'm not clear.
Well, short of offering evidence so the jury can determine there is no responsibility, the circumstance that Judge Heidelman has posed, so long as the trip was for the benefit of the passenger owner, there is an agency, Your Honor.
So the blind person would be responsible and have a right to control, and there would be
right
no bursting bubble.
Right to control. The jury may believe he did not have control because there's one of these circumstances. It could be I was kidnapped. It could be I was asleep. It could be I was reading a book.
So you're saying right to control or control? Which is it you're saying? Because that sounds like you're saying actual control.
When I have the burden of proof, Your Honor, I have offered enough to go to the jury when I show right to control. I can show right to control because an agent is driving the car.
Okay, thank you.
So then what rebuts that? Actual control? No actual control?
Your Honor, I'm not sure where the resting the wheel story came from. I don't think it was Prosser, frankly. But that, when we talk about fictions,
I'm not worried about that. Here's what I'm worried about. You seem to say that if the passenger's blind, that they can put that in and there'd be no control and they might recover. What's the difference between passenger being blind and passenger not having a license to drive and not knowing how to drive a car?
May I break those into two? Not
sure.
Having a license to drive would not be a good reason to make an exception.
Sure.
That person might have lost their license.
Not knowing how to drive.
Well, Your Honor, I have cited some cases that go way back to the history of automobiles. I think we're in that point again. There are people today, not like Ms. Bach's situation, but people who don't know how to drive who hire drivers. They tend to be on the higher scale of economic ladder. But what is the situation when that happens? Are we to say that you are then, because you have allowed someone else to take you on a mission of your own, that you bear no responsibility?
Let me ask you this. Let me break this case back down to the very beginning. When she was injured, she could sue the driver of the other car, and she could have sued the driver of her car.
And she did. Yes, Your Honor.
And she did. And so was there a cross claim between those two drivers for an indemnity or contribution?
I represented the fire district, Your Honor, who was not driving. They were parked in the road. And, yes, we cross-claimed against the other defendant.
Against Mr. Madden, the driver.
Yes.
Okay. And so what I'm wondering about is if you don't impute the negligence of the driver to the passenger, then she should be able to recover 100% of her damages. Certain 90% or 80%, whatever it was, would be allocated to Madden on the cross claim and 20% to your client. It was an 80-20.
Which is effectively what happened, Judge, yeah. Except Madden settled. And curiously enough, it was the insurance company that, I believe, that this the insurance that the owner had purchased for her sure. nephew. So sure. basically the fire district, who did nothing but park its truck in a road, is going to have the responsibility here. It won't have the responsibility.
And the jury sorted it out and said 85%, 15% negligence. But why can't they do that? Why would the nephew or whatever's negligence be imputed to the woman who couldn't drive and had him drive her?
Well, Judge Stith, first of all, let me remark on something that you mentioned earlier, because I think it may be important. We have argued in our brief that Ms. Bach did not ask for a jury determination of this issue. Had
of which issue?
Of the issue of control or anything else, an agency. The judge, Judge Dildine, just ruled that because Ms. Bach testified so clearly, he was going there for me, that it was as a right. matter of law.
And did he object?
That's right, because the jury was instructed that any negligence on the part of Madden should be imputed
right.
to her.
Had he objected to that instruction, and I wasn't pushing it, I would have submitted the alternative, been a lot more complicated, but that her own negligence was a factor in it. So
he didn't object to the instruction?
He did not, on the grounds that it did not submit the question of control or agency. He did not submit it. So basically what I'm saying, Judge, is that this is not the case to reexamine the law of Missouri, is our principal point. I want to say that in terms of policy, I don't think, as long as this court wants to stick with Manley versus Horton, which it should, we follow the both ways rule. It's a matter of contributory negligence, in the old saying, or it's a matter of the liability of the passenger owner. Let's have it work both ways. But when it works both ways, you have to acknowledge that the person out there who's driving along, or in some of these cases standing waiting for a streetcar, you can't insulate yourself as the owner of an automobile by hiring someone else to do your driving.
So why does the Silver versus Patrick apply?
Okay. Judge, that is the important issue, and that's the issue that the judge in Kansas City addressed. There is a vast difference between the situation that we find ourselves here in and a husband and wife driving in a car that they jointly own.
Well, but the case didn't make that distinction. The case didn't say we're ruling because they're husband and wife. They said we're ruling despite the fact that they're husband and wife.
In the Stover case.
Mm-hmm.
And that court also said that the only thing that was presented to them, there was an unusual history, was whether as a matter of law the negligence of the husband would be attributed to the wife.
But the court analyzed it under a bailment theory, not under a joint venture theory that it appears is essential to your analysis.
Your Honor, first of all, we are not pursuing joint venture. I think you have a situation in Stover where, frankly, the rule is there is no right of control of that passenger that exceeds the right of control of the driver. Whereas in a situation,
I thought you said you were. I thought you were relying on a joint venture.
The Court of Appeals did, right?
I'm not sure it did, Your Honor.
Well, is it uncontested that the arrangement between the passenger and the driver was that the passenger owned the car, and if the driver would drive her to and from different places, then the passenger would be allowed to use the car on other occasions?
Yes, Your Honor.
Simple as that. Is that uncontested?
That is uncontested, Your Honor. I don't feel that's the issue here. I think the issue is that particular
That might be a winning issue for you.
Pardon me?
That might be a winning issue
for you. Okay.
The issue was, what were the instructions for that particular trip? And as long as there was no evidence that he had departed from her purpose, there was no evidence from which the trial court could have submitted this to a jury. This was agency pure and simple. And I might stress, to distinguish it from Stover, this was an agency case. And whatever I pleaded it, I pleaded an element of agency. But what the trial court found when the evidence came out was, no, Mr. Madden's the agent of her for her transportation.
Why is it different than Stover? I'm not clear how you are distinguishing.
Stover was dealing, I believe, with a joint journey or joint venture. And the difference is precisely, and there was no other evidence. The evidence here would make Mr. Madden, out of the plaintiff's own mouth, her agent for transportation. And what he said was...
So why was that different than Stover, though, where one was driving the other one?
Cool.
We don't need to rely on any presumption in our case, Your Honor.
But in Stover, the court analyzed it as a bailment. So why was bailment an appropriate analysis in Stover and not in this circumstance? Because the facts of the case, wouldn't a husband-wife relationship be more like an agency than a bailment?
Your Honor, a bailment, and I apologize, I don't recall that discussion in Stover, but a bailment is if I loan my car to someone else for them to go on their purposes, then it's a bailment, and I'm not responsible for what they do. I think in some cases courts will, perhaps it is a fiction also, say that you can create a bailment when you're a passenger in your own car. But that's not what we have at issue here, because we have direct evidence from the principal or the master, however you want to term it, that she had constituted Mr. Madden as his agent. Okay, that's the big difference with Stover. The other difference is, again, there is a basic difference. When I hire someone, and Judge Limbaugh, to address your point, the arrangement they had really shows that Mr. Madden was a chauffeur for hire. The coin of the realm in this instance was an automobile, and the only one the young man had access to.
But Stover co-ownership? Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Is that a difference?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And all I could do is use, and I'm out of time, but when we co-own a vehicle, neither of us has, my wife and I, for instance, has a superior right to the other. I can't tell my wife, stop driving the way you are, or take me to this store, or take me to that store. I can tell someone I hire for money. I can tell someone who doesn't have that co-ownership relationship, stop driving the way you are, take me where I want to go, and if you don't, I'll take the car away from you. I mean, that's the basic difference. But, Your Honor, again, we're talking only about presumptions, and I think we've covered that in our brief, hopefully, adequately.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Are the clocks, earlier Don Carvey said he had 17 seconds left. Yeah, we had a red light, and
No, it's the blinking red. Some people think maybe you have 17 seconds left. That means
you're
over.
No
problem.
Your Honor, just briefly, before I move to the cross appeals in this case. First of all, this issue was preserved because I specifically objected to the fact that she had any right to control the car. And the theory pled as an affirmative defense was that of joint venture, which includes the element of control. And that was clearly stated on the record.
No.
If this court recognizes the ability of a passenger who doesn't know how to drive an automobile to control that car, then they're also going to have to recognize a blind person's ability to control a car. It's also going to have to recognize the right of an intoxicated person.
Well, what about
the
notion of agency?
To the driver. I'm sorry?
What about the agency relationship?
The true definition of an agency relationship, Your Honor, I mean, a principal is subject to vicarious liability for an agent's conduct towards a third party if the agent is an employee who commits a tort during the scope of his employment.
Right. Driving the car.
There's no vicarious liability, even under agency.
Because they weren't employed?
Correct.
So is that a jury question, whether or not this trade-off was an employment, or was that the issue below?
The jury question is the control element,
well,
correct.
Well, I thought it's uncontested that the nephew, was it? Or?
Yeah, correct. The driver.
The nephew was engaged by the lady to drive her car and to drive her to and from different places in return for his use of the car otherwise.
That's correct. But, again, we can't look at it as an agency. We've got to look at it as a bailment because necessary
element
that's under
conclusionary.
All of those is
why can't we look at it as an agency when he is performing service for compensation?
He wasn't compensated.
He's given the use of the car.
He's given use of the car, not on that particular instance. The particular
their deal is: you drive me, you can use my car. That's performing a service for compensation. Why isn't that traditional agency relationship?
Because of the element of control, which is lacking. I mean, for any, whether we have a master-servant relationship,
is your argument just that, look, she might have had a right to control him, but in fact, in this accident, she didn't?
That's correct.
And that should be a fact question determined on a case-by-case basis?
That's correct.
And then what if she's driving his car, her car, and she's not in the car at all, and he has an accident?
If he's driving the car and she's not in, we have the same result. I mean, she, again, would relinquish her right to control that car. And I think my time is up here, so thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel.